All right. Welcome to another episode of the Panther Lair podcast. I'm Chris Peek from PantherLair.com. Glad you could spend a little bit of time with us here. Release this podcast a little bit later than we usually do. We like to have it up for you first thing Wednesday morning so you can, enjoy it on your ride to work or something, or listen to it on your ride to work. I shouldn't be so presumptive to assume that you enjoy this podcast, but I do appreciate you tuning in. Glad you could check it out. We ended up taping this one on Wednesday morning due to the Pitt basketball game being on Tuesday night. And Tuesday was actually like a busy day. I mean, you have the basketball game on Tuesday night, but then you also have the Victory Heights announcement press conference going on Tuesday afternoon. There was kind of a lot to think about and process in addition to some of the other things that I wanted to talk about anyway on the podcast. So we put off the delayed taping, and we're taping this on Wednesday morning. So if you listen to this around lunchtime on Wednesday, you're really getting it pretty fresh, hot off the presses. It didn't sit overnight or anything like that. It's coming fresh to you. And, you know, it was definitely a tough one on Tuesday night, though. You got them. You got the number 11 team in the country on the ropes at home. And Louisville's been showing some warts, like a lot of teams in the ACC have. They haven't been perfect lately, and, you know, they've been slowly dropping down the rankings. But, I mean, they're number 11 right now. And you got them in your home court, and you've got them beat. I mean, you're up 7 with 3 minutes to go. You end up going to overtime, and you end up losing. And there's no – I mean, you start at the end with a foul call on Terrell Brown. It's a brutal call. It's a bad call. There's no question about it. You know it's a bad call. It wasn't a foul. There was no foul there. The over the back, I mean, I guess he went up for the rebound. And was he standing somewhat behind the guy? Sure, but I'd be hard-pressed to say he went over the back. I don't think there should have been any foul called there at all. I don't think there was a foul on Louisville, and I don't think there was a foul on Pitt. It should have been a tie game. With 30 seconds to go, it's no sure thing. I mean, we've seen this team struggle to score in clutch situations at the end of the game all season. But, I mean, you just can't call that there. I mean, if you do, I mean, you got it wrong. I mean, it was a bad call. There was no foul. Should have been a basket. And, you know, I mean, there was some conversation on Twitter after the game about, you know, replay, and I don't know. I've been one who's been, I've defended replay for a long time in all sports, you know, certainly baseball and football. I think it's important to get it right. You want to get it right as much as you can. You know, basketball, it gets tricky because are you going to have a replay on every single foul? I mean, you're going to start using coaches' challenges, and I hate coaches' challenges because it becomes more strategic. I hate coaches' challenges in football because it becomes strategic of when you use it and when you don't, and you only have a limited number, and you lose a timeout or you don't. You need a replay official who's watching it and says, wait, I just saw a replay of that. That we didn't get that right. Stop the game for a second. We need to take another look at this. I mean, can you do that in basketball? I don't know. And quite frankly, I don't care. It was a terrible call, and it definitely affected the outcome of that game. Again, I'm not guaranteeing that Pitt wins when the score is tied with 30 seconds to go and Louisville has the ball. But, I mean, I'd at least like to see them have a shot. You know, I'd like to see what happens in that scenario instead of Louisville getting the ball. And I think they went down and shot free throws, and, you know, a two-point lead turns into a four-point lead, and the game is effectively over. And I said on Twitter after the game, during the game, really, I mean, during that last 30 seconds or so, like, look, that foul call was terrible. It certainly affected the outcome of the game and the ending of the game, but it's ultimately not the reason Pitt lost the game. It's sort of the reason Pitt lost in a very specific manner, if you look at what happened in the final 30 seconds or final minute of the game to ultimately decide the outcome. But you and I both know that game, it never should have gone to overtime. You know, Pitt, 7-point lead with 3 minutes to go, and they go 0-for-3 from the floor and foul twice and let Louisville come back in and get outscored 7-0, obviously, over the final 3 minutes of regulation and sends the game to overtime. And in overtime, Pitt wasn't much better. I mean, they were 2 of 8 from the floor. They didn't shoot much better there. They're 0 of 3 from 3. They turned it over 3 times, committed a bunch of fouls. They did not play well in overtime but it never should have gone to overtime. You make one basket, you know, and I mean, you can look at each possession that Pitt had in those final 3 minutes, but you make a basket in those final 3 minutes and the game never goes to overtime and you have an upset victory over the number 11 team in the country at home and people go nuts. And it was a great environment. I mean, the place was rowdy and loud. The zoo was packed. I mean, it was the perfect setting for Pitt to get that kind of win, and they just crumbled at the end. And this is a problem for this team. This has become a problem for this team, particularly this season. You look at, I mean, they've lost four games in the ACC now. You know what, 2-4. And if you look at those four games that they lost, I mean, Louisville twice, Wake Forest, Miami, in the final 3 minutes of those four games, Pitt is a combined 3 of 19 from the floor. Now, I mean, that includes that first Louisville game that they lost by, you know, a lot, you know, and, you know, maybe, you know, they were losing by 20 in the final 3 minutes. So they went 1 of 5 from the floor, but it's not like that was going to really impact the game. They weren't going to make up a 20-point deficit in the final 3 minutes. But Louisville, they come into the final 3 minutes with a 7-point lead. You know, Miami, they're despite all the scoring droughts in that game, they came into the final 3 minutes trailing only by 4. Wake Forest, they're down 1 in the final 3 minutes. And against Miami, they go 2 of 6 from the floor in the final 3 minutes. Against Wake Forest, they went 0 of 5 from the floor in the final 3 minutes. And then last night against Louisville, they went 0 of 3 from the floor in the final 3 minutes. So, I mean, just those three games. Set aside that Louisville road game. You know, just take the Louisville home game, the Wake Forest home game, the Miami road game. In the final 3 minutes, Pitt was 2 of 14 from the floor in three games that were very much winnable. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how to spell it out any better than that. And a game is a product of 40 minutes of play. I mean, just like I'm saying, the foul call against Terrell Brown wasn't the deciding factor in the game. The game was lost earlier than that. It never should have gotten to that point. I mean, you can make the same case about the, you know, Miami game. Don't fall into a 16-0 hole to open the game, and things are maybe looking different in those final 3 minutes. You know, the Wake Forest game, hold on to a 16-point lead you have in the first half, and things look a little different in the final 3 minutes. So, I mean, I'm not going to pretend that the first 37 minutes of those three games don't matter. But I am going to say that the final 3 minutes of each of those three games could have changed the outcome considerably. And instead of being 2-4, they could be 5-1. I mean, realistically, if you just hit a few shots, if you do better than 2 of 14 in the final 3 minutes against Louisville, Wake Forest, and Miami. And, you know, why do they go into these slumps at the end? I mean, first of all, this is a team that's prone to slumps because they just don't have enough offensive weapons. You know, I mean, they don't have a reliable offensive big man. Their shooters on the wing aren't reliable enough. I mean, Justin Champagne, you look at the splits of his three-point shooting, you know, it's absurdly lopsided into, like, four games. And then, you know, the rest, he's just plummet awful. Like, you know, he made, I think in four games it was. Yeah, I think four games is like a good, like, cutoff for him. Yeah, he was like 2 of 5 against Florida State, 3 of 11 against Northwestern. Not a great percentage, but he at least made some of them. 5 of 6 against Canisius, and then 4 of 7 against North Carolina in that road game. So those four games, he's 14 of 29, 48.3%. The other games, all the other games combined, 2 of 33. From 3, 6.1%, and that includes him going 1 of 2 last night. So, I mean, 1 of 2 is a pretty decent number. We could actually put that in the other column and make him 15 of 31 in over the course of 5 games, and then, you know, 1 of 31 the rest of the way, you know, the other 17 games, 1 of 31, or the other 12 games. So, he's way too inconsistent. Ryan Murphy, a lot of, you know, far too often looks like he doesn't want to shoot. I mean, you want him to have more of a quick trigger than he's got. He had an open shot late in regulation on Tuesday night against Louisville, and it was a deep shot, and you don't really want a three-pointer, but they end up getting a three-point attempt anyway from Trey McGowan's that was no good. And, you know, I mean, so you probably would have rather Murphy take the open shot, even if it was deep, than what you ended up getting. So you don't have, you know, offensive big men you can rely on. You don't have consistent shooters from outside. So it comes down to the two guards. And people wonder why Trey McGowan and Xavier Johnson look like they feel like, you know, look like they're trying to do everything themselves. It's probably because they feel like a lot of times they have to do everything themselves. Problem is, they don't always make good decisions when they try to do those things. And McGowan's, I mean, I think McGowan's has been pretty good this year. I mean, he hasn't been consistent enough. There's no question about that. But I think he's been pretty good. And he's had a lot of moments. I mean, he had the bank in three that put Pitt up seven, which was ultimately their last basket of regulation on Tuesday night. I mean, that was a classic. Oh, that shot doesn't look good. I mean, it wasn't a terrible idea to take the shot, but as it was flying through the air, you thought, oh, this looks terrible. And then, it, you know, off the glass and through the hoop. You know, at this point, you almost feel better about McGowan's taking the ball than you do about Johnson, because Johnson just has been so inconsistent, and his decision-making has just been so questionable. Not good shots. Dribbling in, and I mean, at least McGowan's goes in with a plan, you know, right? McGowan's, when he drives, his plan is to draw contact. I mean, every time. That's the plan. I'm not really sure what Xavier Johnson's plan is right now when he starts to dribble. And worse, I'm not really sure that he has a plan. You know, I'm not really sure that he's aware of what the plan is. And that's concerning. You know, I mean, obviously that's concerning. So he's got to figure out what he is trying to do. And he's got to be a lot more decisive about it. You know, if that means driving and kicking, that's probably a good option. But the other guys have to move around and get open and give him good options. The other guys, I mean, specifically Murphy and Champagne, and to a certain extent Ondiss Toney, have to give McGowan's and Johnson a reason to believe that passing and, you know, kicking the ball out is a good option. I mean, we can sit here and talk about how they need to pass and kick the ball out and get it to the open shooters, but those guys have to knock down the shots consistently, game after game. Not just, you know, Champagne shooting 48% in four games and 6% in the other 12 or 13 or 11. Yeah, the other 13 games. It can't be like that. You've got to be more consistent. You know, Murphy has to be willing to pull the trigger. They have to set him up more. I mean, they do need to pass to him more, but he's got to be willing to pull the trigger when the shot is there. And then the big guys, I don't know. If it was you and you dribbled into the paint or dribble, you know, just tried to dribble and, you know, drive and the defense collapses on you, would you pass to Terrell Brown or Eric Hamilton right now? I can't say either of them seem like a good option at this point. And then, so, I mean, when it becomes crunch time and it's the final 3 minutes and you're trying to hold on to a 7-point lead against Louisville, you're trying to overcome a 1-point deficit against Wake Forest, you're trying to make up 4 points at Miami, what do you think is going to happen? Who's going to try? You know what I mean? Who do you think is going to end up taking the shots? You know, against Louisville, it was, you know, Terrell Brown had one attempt. Xavier Johnson had one, and McGowan's had that deep three. You know, against Wake Forest, I mean, I'm just looking down the list here because I wrote them all down just to kind of calculate what these guys have actually shot in the final 3 minutes. Against Wake Forest, Johnson miss, Hamilton miss, McGowan's 3-point attempt miss, Johnson miss, McGowan's miss. And then the Miami game, you get Murphy with a miss, then McGowan's miss, McGowan's miss. Ondiss Toney made a three. That's one of the few baskets they actually made in the final 3 minutes. Then Toney missed, and then Toney made a basket at the end. You know, the only two baskets in those three losses we're talking about, Louisville, Wake Forest, Miami, the only three baskets, or the only two baskets, I should say, that Pitt made in the final 3 minutes were in the Miami game, where Pitt was trying to overcome the biggest deficit out of all of them. So, you know, I mean, it continues to be a learning process with this team. It continues to be a matter of growth and maturation for those two guys, specifically Trey McGowan's and Xavier Johnson. It's a matter of finding consistency and confidence for Justin Champagne and Ryan Murphy. And then it's just a bigger issue of overall improving the roster. You don't have to make, you know, we always say not every game is some broad, comprehensive statement about the current state of the program or something like that. And that's not what this is. But, you look at this trend here, this problem of the final 3 minutes in these games. I mean, McGowan's and Johnson are going to be the ones who try to take over the game. They're probably the guys you want doing that. They just need to be a little better at it, make better decisions, and be more effective in those situations. Sucks to lose that one, though. That it's brutal when you have a game like that, a win you could get, a big-time win at home, and to lose it, to lose it when you've got a lead like that going into the final 3 minutes, and then to lose it, particularly in overtime when you have a bad call where you could have salvaged the lead that you blew, you could have salvaged that win, and you get the refs making a pretty bad call against you. So that was what happened on Tuesday night. Not the best scene there at the Peterson Event Center after the fact, although I think a lot of people appreciated the effort. You will look back down the road and say, boy, that was a learning experience for the team, but it's pretty rough to take in the moment. Certainly for the coaches and players and I think the fans too, when you have a chance at a win like that and just it slips away. But earlier in the day, a little bit more joyous occasion, a little bit more of a celebration at the Peterson Event Center. They had a press conference in the afternoon. It was sort of a joint production. It was largely athletics, but also Chancellor Patrick Gallagher was there with Heather Leick, the director of athletics, to unveil a more detailed plan for the Victory Heights project. Now, Heather Leick's been talking about this Victory Heights for quite a while. It's been, I was trying to find when she first brought it up. It was at least a year ago, if not more. I can remember we were at a little press gathering in a conference room at the Peterson Event Center. She really kind of laid out like, look, we're going to do all of this and it's going to vastly improve the facilities for, some of these sports that just don't have, they just don't have facilities that are good enough. I mean, quite frankly, and we're talking about some of the most successful sports programs that Pitt has, wrestling, gymnastics, volleyball, track and field. I mean, they've had real success in these sports and their facilities are, I mean, quite frankly, they're shameful. And it's been talked about how some of these facilities are among the worst in the ACC. When you get outside of football and basketball, where I think Pitt's got pretty good facilities on both of those ends. And, you know, since they updated and upgraded the baseball and softball and soccer facilities with the Peterson Sports Complex, those sports have, they've got solid facilities, good facilities that I think are helpful in recruiting. But what Keith Gavin has done, or Dan Fisher or, Sam Snyder or any of these people working in some of these sports that have actually had some real success in the ACC, and they've done it with facilities that, were barely Big East level. They were barely good enough 20 years ago, and they're certainly not good enough nowadays. So, I mean, it's a huge credit to those coaches that they've been able to generate the success they have. Obviously, you don't just give it to the coaches. The players have been very successful. They've had very good players and athletes in those sports, student athletes in wrestling and gymnastics and volleyball and track. But the reality is it's really hard to recruit. I would have to think it's really hard to recruit for Keith Gavin to recruit good wrestlers to Pitt when you bring them into the field house and say, yeah, this is what we have right now. I mean, he's probably been recruiting on the promise of the Victory Heights project for a long time. I think probably, Dan Fisher has been recruiting on the promise of the Victory Heights project for at least the last year, saying, okay, this is what we have now, but we're going to have something way cooler very soon. Promise. And now it's come a little bit more into focus of what this project is. The plan is to break ground next summer, the summer of 2021, and then ideally have it done at least the first part of the project in the fall of 2023. And kind of the centerpiece is going to be this new arena sports performance complex I didn't cover the basketball game on Tuesday night. Jim Hammett covered it for our site. But I'm really curious the next time I'm at the Peterson Event Center, I want to take a walk outside and look at the space between the Peterson Event Center and those steps that come down from Sutherland Drive. No, that's not Sutherland Drive. What's that road that is that Aliquippa Street that runs there? I don't know the names of these roads. let me see. Yeah, Aliquippa Street. You know, those steps that come down from Aliquippa Street, between that those steps and the Panther Hall dormitory is where this new complex is going to go. And it's pretty narrow. It's pretty narrow. And so it's going to have to be, you know, multi-floors. It's going to have to go up a few levels to have the arena and the sports performance complex and all this kind of stuff. So I'm interested to see, to stand there and try and envision it. But that's where the bulk of this thing's going to go. And then you're going to have, you know, kind of the second phase. You're going to build, they're going to tear down the OC lot. I mean, they might do the, I don't know what the exact timeline is of when they're going to tear this down or when they're going to build that. But the second phase is they're going to build the lacrosse, a field for the new women's lacrosse program, and put that where the OC lot is now, and kind of that eastern part of Trees Hall, some of that's going to come down, and put a, whatchamacallit, a lacrosse field there, and then an indoor track facility kind of behind the cost center, if you can envision that. Sort of where there's a bubble now. There's a bubble there now, and it'll be back there. So there's a lot that's going to happen in that upper campus area, and every single bit of it is deserved. Every single bit of it, because like I said, I mean, those are some of the programs that have had the most success at Pitt in recent history. You know, I mean, they deserve good facilities, you know, ACC level facilities, and that's what they're going to get. I don't know if they'll have the best in the conference, because I haven't polled every, you know, school in the conference to see what their volleyball arenas look like, but they're going to have the kind of facilities that they need and deserve, and it's going to be pricey. Heather Lake said, looking at about $250 million. And from the time that she first talked to us about this Victory Heights project, from the first time that Heather Lake ever mentioned it and brought it up, my first question was always and continues to be, how are you going to pay for this? You know, where's the money going to come from to pay for a project of this scope? And we got a little bit of an answer to that on Tuesday from Heather Lake and Patrick Gallagher. And Heather Lake said, look, we're going to work very hard to try and raise as much of this as we can through donations and fundraising. Now, my phone's ringing with a call from Birmingham, Alabama. What do you think this is? You know, do you think this is a real call? I'll find out later. We'll see if they leave a voicemail. Get out of here with that. But Heather Lake said they want to raise as much of it as they can through donations and fundraising from the athletic department. And I, you know, I think that was always what they said from the beginning, and that was always what I had heard. And, you know, my thought continues to be of, okay, how much of $250 million are you really going to raise for Olympic sports? If this $250 million was going for a new football stadium, I don't know if you would raise all $250, but I think you'd raise a whole bunch of money. I think you'd raise a significant portion of that $250. Even though these facilities are very much needed, even though they're absolutely necessary for Pitt's athletic department to succeed as a whole, you know, comprehensive excellence, as Heather likes to say, I think you're going to have a hard time raising a significant percentage of those. I think Heather Lake said they already had 10 donations of six or seven figures. Curious about the breakdown of those. But ultimately, what it's going to come down to, and what it is coming down to, is the university is going on the hook for a big chunk of this project. And that was what I kind of figured was going to be the case, and what I sort of heard was going to be the case, you know, over the last year, that the university is going to put up a bunch of money for this through debt financing. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I'm an economist and know what's smart and what's not, but I think it's very interesting that Pitt, the university, not the athletic department, the university, is willing to go on the hook on probably a long-term debt package to or debt plan to pay for this project. Now, there are going to be, you know, it's not going to be exclusively for athletics. The sports performance complex or is going to have applications and uses beyond athletics, where the general student body will be able to go in there and use some things, which is nice. I mean, you need to be able to tie it into the university as a whole and not just have it about athletics. But it does give, at least initially, it gave me a little pause because it's a lot of money for the university to sort of take on. It's a lot of debt for the university to take on. And there's plenty of time between now and groundbreaking in summer of 2021 for the athletic department to raise more money. I just don't know how much money they're really going to be able to raise. And I think the university is still going to be on the hook for a big portion of it. And so that gave me concern. I mean, to be quite honest, it's an ambitious project. It's a big project. It's a necessary project. But it's a very expensive project. And that gave me some concern. But as I've thought about it, particularly since the press conference on Tuesday, and as I've looked at it and sort of in conjunction with getting a sense of everything that Pitt is doing right now, and by Pitt I mean the university, not the athletic department, set the Victory Heights project aside, there's a lot going on with Pitt's campus right now. Pitt is really remaking significant portions of its campus. Next to Western Psych is the O'Hara Garage. I think they're next to each other. If it's not next to Western Psych, it's like, you know, just a little bit down the street, you know, one or two doors down. And the O'Hara Garage, we park there, media parks there for basketball games. And we usually come in, I usually park the top entrance. There's a top entrance and a bottom entrance. I usually come in the top entrance and just sort of park on the first floor, maybe the second floor down. Well, the other day I happened to drive in from the bottom entrance because I thought the top was closed for some reason. Anyway, because there's construction and everything. So I come in from the bottom entrance and I drove all the way up to the top and parked on the top. And as I'm driving up, I mean, that garage is decrepit. The garage should be torn down. The garage, it's a terrible design in the first place. I'm surprised that every car that drives in there is not scraped up on the sides because of the way it's set up. But, I mean, the thing itself is falling down. It looks like a disaster when you're in that garage. And Pitt's going to tear it down. And in its place, they're not going to put up another parking garage. They're going to put up a rec center, a student rec center, that somebody said it could really is going to be almost a bit of a conduit from lower campus to upper campus. I think somebody on the message boards, and I can't verify this, but I think it sounds true, and I think it is accurate, that you're going to be able to go in the bottom of this rec center and come out the top and really kind of connect yourself from lower campus to upper campus with a state-of-the-art facility for all the students to use. And I think it's going to become a bit of a hub of campus, So they're doing that, and they're building dorms all over the place, and there's a lot of construction going on. You see the whole revitalization project with Bigelow Boulevard between 5th and Forbes, and which is closed right now. You can't even drive on Bigelow between 5th and Forbes because they're doing a whole project there to make it all better. I mean, Pitt's got a lot going on right now, and a big part of the reason that Pitt has so much going on right now is because Pitt's doing really well. Now, if I walked up to someone, you know, with the echo chamber I live in, and the circle of people that I know or are in contact with on a regular basis, if I walked up to someone and said, "Hey, you know, Pitt's doing really well right now," they would turn to me and say, "Are you kidding me? Did you watch the Boston College game? Did you see the Louisville game last night? They're not doing well. They stink." You know, I mean, that would be the response from the people that I usually talk to. But when I say Pitt's doing really well, I'm talking about the university. I think the university is really in a good place with enrollment and, you know, all, obviously the money they draw in from tuition and research and grants, all the different ways that universities generate, I guess you can't say profit, right, because it's a nonprofit, all the ways that the universities bring in revenue. I think Pitt is excelling and as a university is really moving forward a lot, particularly under this leadership, under this chancellor, Patrick Gallagher. And I think he's a guy with a vision for what Pitt can be as a campus, and I think he's doing a lot to put that vision into place and to get to move Pitt forward. And I think you're going to see over the next 5 years, you're going to see Oakland continuing to change, and I think it's going to be really impressive to see what Oakland becomes as Pitt continues to integrate itself more into the community, but also upgrade the overall campus. It's going to be interesting to watch. And so the thing that gives me some encouragement about this whole plan being a good one, not just for athletics, but for the university as a whole, and being a sound investment for the university as a whole, and I'm talking about Victory Heights now, the thing that gives me some encouragement about Victory Heights being a sound investment for the university is the involvement of Patrick Gallagher and the fact that he has signed off on this. I think if you're a Pitt fan and if you're a Pitt alum, you should have a lot of confidence in Patrick Gallagher right now, because I think he knows his business. I think he's got really good people in place working around him. And I'm not just talking about athletics here. I mean, you've got to take the long view of the university as a whole. And I think he's got a lot of good people, smart people, who really know what they're doing working around him. And that's why Pitt as a university is moving forward. And I think that's why they're willing to move the athletic department forward through this Victory Heights project. And so I was skeptical. I was skeptical when I first heard about this Victory Heights project. I was skeptical about the university taking on that kind of investment, that kind of debt to fund the Victory Heights project. But, you know, the more I've learned about Patrick Gallagher and seen how he's working, and, you know, and also seeing him talk during the press conference on Tuesday, I think, you know, you could put a little bit of trust in him or a little bit of faith in him that he's making good decisions for the university and that he wouldn't be willing to put this money in from the university and take on this debt for the university if it wasn't in the best interests of the university. And so we all know how construction projects go, whether it's something on your home or whether it's something on a grand scale. But we'll see what this whole thing looks like. Heck, we'll see what the plans even look like by the time they break ground next summer in 2021. And then we'll see what it actually looks like when it's finished in the fall of 2023. I think the plan for Victory Heights as a whole, the whole project, I think has changed from the first time Heather like talked to us to what they actually presented to the public on Tuesday. And I imagine that there will be tweaks and adjustments also as you move closer to the actual completion of the project. But overall, I think you're going to get, Pitt is going to get what Pitt needs. The athletic department is going to get what it needs, which is better facilities, top of the line facilities for some of its most successful programs. And I know football, basketball, this is our focus. This is what we talk about, right? What do I say when I give the tagline of the website? Right? I say most comprehensive source of Pitt sports news on the internet. We cover it all. And what do I say? I say football, basketball, and recruiting. I know that's what we all care about the most. You know, I mean, I know that's where all the interest is. I can tell you by the numbers of what, you know, we can write 10 articles on football recruiting and 10 articles on, you know, gymnastics and wrestling and volleyball, and I can tell you which ones are going to get the most hits. I can tell you which ones are going to get the most clicks and, you know, click-throughs and links and shares and retweets and favorites and all of those things and comments on the message board. I can tell you which ones. You don't need me to tell you. You know. But this stuff is important, too. Because it is about having an athletic department overall that's successful. Of course, if you have a successful football program and a successful men's basketball program, that raises interest overall in your athletic department, and that'll raise donations overall for your athletic department, and it will ultimately make the biggest impact on your athletic department. So you want to make sure you focus on those things as well. And, you know, I think Jeff Capel, you know, with that contract extension last week, and, you know, you see some positive signs there going forward from that program. Football program obviously has some things to work out, and they've got a chance, should have a chance in 2020 to have a really good season, which would obviously positively impact everything else going on in athletics. All right. Talk a little basketball, talk a little Olympic sports. All those things are important. We spent a lot of time on Upper Campus on this podcast, didn't we? We got plenty to talk about, of course, all week, every week. And that's what we do on the message boards at panther-lair.com, pittsburgh.rivals.com. Like I said, it's the most comprehensive source of Pitt sports news on the internet. Football, basketball, recruiting. We cover it all at pantherlair.com. And, of course, we have message boards where we're talking about the Victory Heights project. There are conversations going on the message board about that project. I don't have it in front of me right now, but there's a actually, I will find it. Again, I'm taping this on Wednesday morning. Let me find the Victory Heights project thread. We had a pretty good one going on. Yeah, I got about 70 posts in a thread that started on Tuesday during the press conference, about 70 posts in there. So, I mean, there are conversations going on about that, too. in addition to the football recruiting news and basketball post-game discussions and all of those things that we do all day, every day. Make sure you tune in Saturday morning on 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh for the Panthers Insider Show, 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. It's all Pitt sports talk. It's like this podcast, but it's on the radio, so you can call in and you can talk back to me. If you want to be like, dude, you're an idiot, or Chris, I think you've made some brilliant points, I'll take all those calls. So make sure you tune in Saturday morning, 8 a.m., 93.7 The Fan for the Panthers Insider Show. I'd like to hear from you there. Check out the website. Also, go get some New Belgium beer. I don't have one this morning because I'm taping this in the morning, and Wednesday mornings, as far as you need to know, are not when I like to drink beer. So New Belgium, I recommend it. Anything. I had a Hemperer, the hemp IPA that they make. I had that during the game on Tuesday night. I was watching the game from home with, like I say, Jim Hammett covering the game. So those are really good. I still enjoy it. It's a unique taste, maybe a bit of an acquired flavor, but I like it quite a bit. So I would recommend checking it out. Hemperer IPA from New Belgium, but really anything you can find from New Belgium is probably going to be pretty good. So go look for that. Support them because they support the podcast. We'll be back with another podcast next Wednesday. Stay tuned to PantherLair.com in between. And of course, check out the Panthers Insider Show on Saturday morning. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great rest of the week, a great weekend. We will talk to you next Wednesday.